The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
We're very happy to welcome back to the show Tom Mann from the Brookings Institute. Tom, welcome.
Happy to be with you.
So, did the president miscalculate? It seemed that his strategy was, oh boy, those, number one, the Republicans won't dare let the sequester happen, and then if they do, they're going to get a backlash, they're going to suffer. Has this strategy backfired on him yet?
Not yet. It's very much the beginning of the game, not the the end of it. The president didn't remember really have much choice at the time. We had the threat of a public default. The Republicans had taken the debt ceiling hostage, refusing to raise the limit. It came down to, after failed negotiations, the Budget Control Act of 2011 in two parts. The first they could agree to of caps on spending. The second was to empower a super committee with fast-track privileges to work out a larger deal, $1.2-plus trillion over 10 years. It didn't work. The Republicans really wouldn't give on taxes, and therefore we ended up with the backup. We had a backup because Republicans insisted there be something automatic to take hold. The Democrats, Jack Lew in this case, said, well, there's the old Graham Rudman sequester. We'd be agreeable to that if it also automatically increased taxes. The Republicans said no to taxes, but they were happy to take credit for the rest. And Obama agreed to it. He could have said no, and we could have had a default then. So, listen, there are not many good choices when you're up against a party that is, is so consumed with Grover Norquist's no new tax pledge. On the sequester, what it comes down to is what happens over time, not what happens in the first 2 days or 3 days of the sequester. This was always going to roll out over time. It's stupid, stupid, stupid. It makes no macroeconomic sense. It makes no sense in terms of cutting budgets, supporting things that are needed and that the country wants. But Republicans have a lot more of this in mind.
I want to ask you something very specific, though, about the negotiations. Bob Woodward, well-known journalist, investigative reporter, and more, wrote a piece in the Washington Post. There was a little kind of inside baseball flap because Gene Sperling from the White House apparently sent him an email, very irate, like, how dare you write this? But what he wrote about was the president getting tax increases in the fiscal cliff deal. So the Republicans said, okay, we gave him tax increases. Now let's talk about entitlement reform. And when he came back to the sequester asking for more revenue increases. So apparently you don't agree that the president sort of changed the deal. Bob Woodward said he did.
Yeah, I disagree heartily with Bob Woodward, but then
why?
I disagreed with Woodward in his book when he said the deal, the negotiation between the president and the speaker, Boehner, failed because of the president's fault, that he failed to work his will on Congress. I think that's nuts. And Eric Cantor recently in The New Yorker piece by Ryan Lizza took credit for scuttling the deal, telling Boehner it wouldn't be good for the party and may not even be able to produce the votes for it. So I think Woodward is just off base. I mean,
but the president got tax increases and then he wanted more revenue increases.
You're speaking like a partisan now.
Well, maybe you're speaking like a partisan. I just don't. But why? Tell us again why that's not true. I just don't understand what you're saying.
Because there was no connection at all. At no time did the president ever say ever say at all that taxes were off the table. He said time and again that in the same package there would have to be entitlements combined with tax increases, and the numbers he was using and that Boehner was using during negotiation was $1.2 trillion. Now, in the fiscal cliff deal, they did not get $1.2 trillion because there were no entitlements in it. So they ended up with a much smaller package. There's no way that you could reach any kind of stabilization of the debt to GDP ratio without raising more revenue. So it's almost laughable to think otherwise. And frankly, if you follow the commentary and the stories since then, Woodward is on very shaky ground. Gene Sperling wrote a very friendly, apologetic email. There were no threats, and certainly there was no changing the goalposts when it comes to this negotiation.
Well, Tom, how does this proceed? Do we get some kind of a negotiation, or at least even some kind of a gauntlet being thrown down by either side before March 27th?
No, I think they're deciding to not sort of draw lines and engage for the continuing resolution. The president has said he agreed to the overall cap that was approved in 2011 in the Budget Control Act, and that the sequester is now the law, and therefore, until it's renegotiated, he would live with that. If the Republicans don't make any significant changes in that, I think they'll both agree, and the fight will await the new budget for the following fiscal year.
So is what move, if any, will the president make on entitlement reform? And let me couch this in sort of a broad perspective that many of the, you know, panels and commissions have said it's not necessarily that we need to have big entitlement cuts or changes right now, but we need to put something in place now, because if we wait, small changes that could make a big difference over time will be much costlier. So saying that there's no budget deficit problem now for 10 years seems to be very short-sighted.
You actually need some, even to properly stabilize the debt over the next 10 years. The long haul is all about health care costs, and that's really something quite separate. The president, even though people don't acknowledge it, the president has tabled proposals for Social Security, the chain CPI, and for Medicare savings, including some increased means testing for Medicare. Those proposals can be accessed by going on whitehouse.gov and can also be found in his last budget. You will see them again included, I presume, in the coming budget, but he will not do that. He will not move into those negotiations until the Republicans drop their insistence on holding to Grover Norquist, no new tax plan.
Tom, there's some anticipation of this new Paul Ryan budget that will be coming in the next few days. Will it make any more of an impact than the original one?
If it does, it will be in terms of scaring Republican members of Congress. If you want to know the truth, the only way any progress on this whole mess will be made is if Republicans come to fear the electoral cost of their holding to their current position. If that happens, you'll see some nervous Republicans, and it doesn't take many to defeat the Ryan budget on the floor. I think once you get movement like that and begin to say, hey, you know, doing away with some some tax credits, tax expenditures.
Yes,
is really a way of cutting spending, not raising taxes. Then you can begin to make some progress.
So I think you're anticipating what I wanted to ask you next. I mean, if we need more revenues, why does it have to come from income taxes? Why can't it come from a substantial overhaul of the corporate tax system, broad overhaul?
We don't get any money out of the corporate tax. We have to cut the tax rates on the corporate tax, but you won't get any real money out of that because so many corporations now are paying well below that top rate with their various deductions.
If you cut the top rate, I mean, you have companies that are paying 2 or 3%. What if you cut it to 20%? They'd be paying more than they're paying now.
Yeah, but on average, it wouldn't save much money, really. CBO's been absolutely crystal clear on that. What we would need instead is some consumption tax. I mean, a carbon tax would be the best thing. You could even deal with people with really low incomes by rebating some of those funds, but a carbon tax would be a blessing for all. Listen, the reality is we are aging as a society. We have and will have many more retirees to workers than we have had in the past, and people are living to later ages. You can and we must control healthcare costs, but in addition, we're going to have to raise revenues 2 to 3 percentage points more to deal with this aging society. I'm convinced it will happen. It's a matter of when we do it and if we do it intelligently, not by raising tax rates, individual or corporate, but in various other ways, taking steps that will be economically efficient and fair.
But you don't see that happening this month.
Not a chance.
Okay, so what the next big event or speech we should be listening for?
No telling when the next speech will be. The president will be commenting every time some pain is felt with the sequester, but I think we'll learn next week whether the House Republican plan for the CR is acceptable to the Senate Democrats and the administration. If it is, we won't need a speech on either side. We'll get that done. And then the debate will shift on the budget to the next fiscal year. So Ryan's budget resolution, Murray's budget resolution in the Senate, and then we'll have plenty of speeches.
Indeed, but you are optimistic that we'll get through this part of it and then enter the substantial discussions.
I will. It's going to be ugly and messy and stupid. So much of our deficit reduction thus far has been front-loaded during a weak economic time. It's hurt the economy. It will do so again this year, and none of it or very little of it has dealt with the real cost drivers in the economy. So we haven't done well with it. It's going to be ugly, but I think eventually, as Churchill always said, the Americans do the right thing after they've explored every other alternative.
Tom Mann, thank you so much for joining us for a spirited discussion from the Brookings Institute.
You can listen to The Hayes Advantage weekdays at 12:30 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013, Bloomberg LP.